Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal. Hi, welcome tonight, and I'm Rick, and you're here with me at Affair Recovery Radio, and tonight I'm here on my own, and I wanted to try something new tonight. Certainly hope that you guys will participate, those of you listening, and I wanted to play a little game called Ask Rick, and in fact, I think we even opened a little website called AskRick.com, and I kind of thought it would be an interesting little experiment because, you know, in reality, what you guys struggle with is far more important than what John or Leslie or me or Wayne, Octavius, Karen, or as our staff grows. I mean, what you're dealing with is really far more important. And so I really, in the Ask Rick program, hope you'll call us tonight. And I wanted to kind of deal with it. You know, what is, I had two questions. What is the most important issue for you in terms of dealing with infidelity? What is your, you know, what's the most important thing you would like help addressing? The most important thing you would like help addressing? And we'll start with that one. I think I'll lay the second question out later. But if you wouldn't mind calling in and just sharing tonight, you know, what is the most important thing that as a couple dealing with infidelity, you would actually like help addressing? Now, some of you someday will listen to this and it'll just be a recording since it's a podcast. And I guess on the front end, if nobody calls in, don't be discouraged. It doesn't mean that there aren't people, but I have that suffer with infidelity. But I have a hunch, since many people call in on a regular basis anyway, you're out there. And some of you may have never even called before. But we would be most appreciative tonight, because as we begin to develop materials, as we continue to develop materials, actually we've already begun developing a lot of materials, but as we develop materials, for us to know what's the most important issue to you, I want to make sure that that is absolutely covered, that we're able to get to those things for your sake, and also just so that we can support you more in your journey. Now, if you want to call us tonight, you can reach us at area code 512-635-9930.
365.
I got that backwards. My dyslexia is killing me. 512-365-9930. That's 512-365-9930. And give us a call. Or you can also email me at radio@hope-now.com. That's radio@hope-now.com if you don't want to have your voice on the air, even though I'd be most appreciative, guys, if you would call in. I mean, what's your most important issue in dealing with infidelity? I mean, what's it going to be? And we'll see if we can't begin to address that tonight. In addition, I wanted to talk a little bit more tonight, as I'm waiting for these calls to come in, on the issue of anger. This past week in the newsletter, I wrote on anger as a result of the weekend or the program about 3 weeks ago that I was a part of. And I was absolutely floored, basically, by the number of people that, you know, have commented on that particular article. So I wanted to talk more about the cores of anger. And someone, thank you, whoever this is that's helping us out here. Somebody's already calling about their most important issue. Okay, we have Kathy on line one. So, Kathy, what is your most important issue?
My most important issue and my toughest issue is the fact that my husband could disrespect me so badly with degrading me as a human being.
So to you, the most difficult thing to in dealing with is kind of getting your mind around how badly your husband could disrespect you?
Right. On how he could lie about me as be married to me, tell me he loves me, and tell me he wants to be married to me, but disrespect me so bad by saying so many horrific things about me behind my back. That's one of the toughest things I deal with.
Right. And in your mind, as you've kind of worked through that, Kathy, how do you answer that question?
Well, I answer it as he used it as an excuse for his bad behavior. But his treatment of me was bad in ways. So I don't know that he used it as an excuse. Maybe he really felt that way. He never gave me time to be a wife. So, you know, I really don't know. When we first got married, he had been married before, and he told me horrific things about his first wife. After they got divorced, she was this bad person, and I used to say to him, yeah, someday if I'd be saying those things about me, and he'd say, oh, no, I won't, no, I won't, and then, yes, he did. He did to his affair partners, and now that he's been discovered, he can say those bad things about his affair partners. I don't know, Rick, but that's the toughest one for me.
Okay, Kathy, so in terms of that question, you know, how could he have disrespected me the way he did? In your mind, and I don't know if you can do this off the top of your head, but why is it important to you to answer that question?
Because if he could disrespect me that badly, if he could tell somebody else that I was this horrific person, this horrible person, he didn't want to be with me, he didn't want to be married to me, he didn't want, he was trying to figure out ways of getting rid of me, but he felt stuck with me and all that. Well, then how in the world could I possibly believe now when he says he wants to re-enter the marriage? How can I ever truly get my arms around the fact which one of those is true?
Right. And I'm sorry, a little delay here, I'm typing. But and in terms of his actions now, is it different, or do you feel like is this kind of the way he's always been, only now he's just remorseful, or do you see any heart change in him?
No, I do. I see him working on it. I think he's tried to, how can you not want to change that absolute ugly person you were? I mean, gosh, I look back at that and I think, oh, it's just, I don't know how you could live in that and be that horrific kind of a person to a person you say you love, or even to other people, and not want to change once you've been discovered.
Right, and I would certainly hope that as he goes through this process, obviously, that maybe his heart's been broken. And maybe, you know, I think sometimes when people really get to the place, Kathy, where they're so incredibly disrespectful, in AA they've got a wonderful saying that says, if you spot it, you got it.
If you spot it, you got it?
If you spot it, you got it.
What does that mean?
Well, typically, what it means is that if someone is being terribly disrespectful of other people, in reality, it means they're terribly disrespectful of themselves. It's about their own self-loathing and their own self-contempt. And that ultimately, somebody's need to put other people down is really nothing more than an indicator of their own brokenness and their own lack of self-acceptance. And so what they do is they project that off onto other people. And so, you know, until they kind of come to a place of, I think, personal healing, where they begin to experience God's redemption, where they begin to understand the whole concept of grace and mercy. Until that occurs, and they have a great deal of trouble not being incredibly condescending and judgmental of other people, because, you know, they're operating now more out of a sense of judgmentalism and moralism and legalism rather than out of a concept that we operate under, which is called grace.
Well, you know, I do believe that we all need to extend grace and mercy to others, because there's times when we need grace and mercy ourselves. But when you've lived with someone who has lied to you for so long, and then you find out that all these other horrible things that they've said about you, and here you are, their wife, the person that they're supposed to hold to a higher level, and yet you find out that behind your back they think something totally and completely different of you, it makes you go, wow, how do I ever trust that again?
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, unless there is phenomenal change and a great deal of repentance, because to do that, you know, is just flat out wrong, you know? I mean, it is, I mean, moral judgment there, but I mean, it's horrible to treat another person like that. And boy, I hope that he's incredibly repentant for having been that way. And I would think, you know, he's going to have to find enough healing, Kathy, where when he's talking about anyone, he's got to be able to get beyond that. Because that's really not the way he needs to judge people, right?
Right. Right.
Even as a fair partner.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, it does. It even bothers me now when I hear him berate or talk negative about his affair partner. Now, isn't that bizarre?
Yeah. Well, it's an old pattern, and, you know, hopefully the process of sanctification is something that works out over a long period of time, not something that just kind of happens tonight. And I think that's part of the journey. I mean, my journey of 23 years, I've learned a lot of things, and I don't know that I knew it all at the front end of the journey. Didn't even know it all by year 5 or year 20, and I'm still learning, but hopefully God's going to continue working that out in him. But remember that if you spot it, you got it. Because anytime someone's being critical and judgmental of another person, it's really saying something about them. It has nothing to do with the other person. And so to me, how could they have disrespected me? Well, the problem with the disrespect, I mean, if they're being disrespectful to someone else, it's really about their own self-loathing and their own self-contempt.
Well, you know, going through my marriage, I haven't been exactly happy because my husband's never been emotionally there. I mean, he's been there as a person, but not as an emotion. I mean, not emotionally there. And, but I just could never bring myself to degrade my husband to other people. I just couldn't do it because he's my husband. Now, to tell him the things I felt that were wrong or the things that he was doing to violate our marriage, I had no problem doing. But to go to another person, even my best friend, and to put my husband down, to degrade him, is just not something I could do.
Well, you're not broken in the same way, are you?
No, I'm not.
So I'm glad that you don't have that one. You know, that would be an awful thing to have to work through.
Well, how do you get yourself past that, Rick? How can you get yourself past that?
Well, you know, to me, Kathy, the biggest thing for someone getting past the whole piece of disrespect and a critical attitude and all of those things really is grace. Until the person understands grace and that where they're able to basically accept themselves and learn to be transparent themselves about how they are, until that occurs, you know, they're always going to want to push other people down in order to kind of elevate themselves. And that is really a piece of spiritual healing as much as anything, even more importantly than psychological healing. They've got to begin to come to the place where they experience the love of God, because then they no longer have to be disrespectful to other people so that they can feel good about them. They can then begin to love other people as God would call them to.
Oh, that makes true sense. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's been my toughest. That's been one of my very toughest things to get past.
Well, and that's a rough one to let go of because, I mean, that, you know, it makes you question, I think, whether the other person loves you. But in reality, the what it indicates is whether or not they really love them, you know, themselves, and are they able to accept God's grace. And so that's a problem.
I have a little bit of an experience similar to Kathy's. My husband was very disrespectful to me, and it got me to the point where I fought back against the disrespectfulness. And when I did, he would just run away in another direction to reform his life or to forget what we had together. He did that so many times that I think now I cannot believe him if he were to say, you know, I want to work things out with you. For what reason? So that he could leave me again? You know, or hurt me again. And so I told him this time that he can apologize a million times, but if I don't see a change in his behavior, then the apology means nothing.
Right. Right, but if he had come to my face and said the things to my face, that would have been one thing. But to my face, he was saying that I love you. No, I wouldn't. I don't want to lose you. No, I'm not having an affair. No, I'm not doing it. To my face, one thing. Then behind my back, all this other stuff was said.
Right. And that would be certainly the consistent with an addict, right? And that dual life that we live.
Right.
And, you know, what, you know, we pretend to be perfect on one side, but you begin to see the brokenness and what's set in the dark. So, I mean, that is just like pure grade A addict behavior.
Wow. Okay. Would you like to ask him?
Oh, I'd love to. But okay. Just, I want you to remember your takeaways. If you spot it, you got it, okay?
Okay.
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 Good.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, it could have been better, but...
So what is the single most important issue for you in terms of dealing with infidelity?
Well, rebuilding the trust. And, you know, as you pointed out, of course, it was from lack of respect for myself. And I've looked back at my past and my childhood and the things that led me and contributed to my inappropriate behavior, and you know, I've looked at my brokenness, and I have reconciled that, and I just want to be a better person. It's kind of a common thread when people are broken, they want to turn their life around, and you know, and I did do all those horrible things, and now I look back, and I'm aghast at my actions, and I've told the wife that I feel that way, and I have worked hard on being the opposite of criticism, and I'm working on how to walk Christ-like, and I'm trying really hard on, and I realize that I've been real critical about inappropriate reasons.
Right, and so you were saying the biggest issue for you is regaining trust?
You know, the trust is the biggest issue in our marriage, in that she doesn't believe the thing I say.
Well, let me ask you, what were those inappropriate reasons?
Well, in that if I had a problem with the wife, like say she hurt me, instead of saying you hurt me and deal with it about something, I would just take it into the heart and then I would lash out inappropriately.
Right.
Because, you know, in relationships, it's a yin and yang thing, and you hurt somebody, you hurt your spouse. The one you're supposed to love the most is usually the one you hurt the worst. So rather than say, you know, that really hurt me, that really bothered me, I would just take it inside and then use it as it was just like a dagger in a heart that turned around.
Right.
Put her down behind her back rather than do it to her face. I mean, I wouldn't, should have put her down, but I should have come to her and said, you know, I've got a problem with this.
Right, so that anger would come out elsewhere.
Right, inappropriately.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah. And I, in many ways, that reminds me of a story of something that happened when I was in real estate, where somebody cheated me on a deal, and they still kind of wanted to be friends. And rather than having the integrity to confront this guy, this was years and years ago, and just tell him how I felt about what I'd done or what he had done to me, what I did was I kind of went underground and just really tried to avoid him. And to his face, I was nice. But on the inside, I was absolutely furious because of what he had done. And I remember just the vile thoughts that I kind of had every time I went by the guy's office. And I remember one day somebody asked what I thought of the guy, and I slandered him. You know, all of that, you know, kind of pus that just came like a boil being lanced, man. It just came out, and I said the worst things about him. And God, in his absolute love for me, actually made sure that everything I said about this guy got back to him, which really hurt his feelings. I mean, you can guess. And he called me up and really smoked my answering machine because he couldn't believe I'd said that about him. And what was interesting, it made me really mad when he called me. So I called him back and got his answering machine, and in the most manly way, really railed on him. But basically what I finally did, I think what Jesus taught in Luke 17, where he says, you know, if your brother sins, rebuke him. If he repents, forgive him. If he sins seven times in a day and seven times comes to you and repents, forgive him. And, you know, I never rebuked this guy. I never really had enough courage to come to him and tell him how I really felt about what he had done. Instead, I just let it fester like a boil until it finally blew up and, you know, just caused all kinds of problems. And, you know, I think what you're describing is probably a very, very common piece where if someone hurts you, if you're trying to be, quote, a good guy and you don't have, in some ways, it's because I didn't have enough courage just to say what I really thought. Or in my mind, you know, it wasn't okay to be honest and wasn't okay to really share. So, you know, ultimately that bitterness kind of built up until it popped. Does that seem kind of like what you're saying there?
Well, yeah, but mine starts from way, way back when I was a kid, and unloved by peers and unloved by parents and physically and emotionally abused, sexually abused. All that poison was already inside me. So when I walked in from my first marriage into my second marriage, I already had this huge load of baggage on my shoulders. So I wasn't able to be honest about my feelings, and I didn't even know how to feel. I'm just kind of learning those skills now at 55, and that's really sad.
Right.
It wasn't about what my wife... I was a conflict avoider. I would let one little thing that hurt me and, you know, that was, you know, probably appropriate, but I found it hurtful, fester. And I was a conflict avoider anyway. And so I would lash out inappropriately about stuff that's just normal marriage stuff that she should have been able to confide and talk to me about. I couldn't relate to because I was so messed up from my childhood and all those things.
Yeah, I understand.
And egotism was part of it, and machoism, and I'm a man, I'm tough, I'm in construction, you know, and you can't hurt me because I'm just unhurtable and...
Well, also, let me ask is, on a man's perspective, when your wife wants to talk to you about something and you think she's starting conflict and you would run away from the conflict, it seems like you were avoiding it at that time, but you're coming back years later and you're really having to go back and do something that you could have done years ago.
Absolutely. I wish I'd have started this when I was 19. In fact, I was talking to our pastor, counselor, I had counseling on Thursday, and he said it's funny that roles reversed. At 55, men tend to look back at their life and go, I see what the wife's been trying to get me to engage in all these years. That's good stuff.
Oh, really?
I want to engage in it, but she's kind of angry because all these years she's been inviting him into it, and he's avoided it. And now she's kind of a little angry, and she's going, well, you know, I ain't got to do that because all these years I invited you there.
Well, okay.
Kind of funny.
Yeah, and you were avoiding it. Would it have something to do with maybe the fact that you thought different of her as a woman and as a man? And Rick, maybe you can answer this too. Do you think men don't engage in that because they feel like the woman is beneath him?
No.
No.
What is it? Or that, you know, he's the man, the head of the household, and she can't come to him?
No.
No.
Well, then what is it? I mean, I know you explained it a little bit, but I mean, if you're avoiding that, what's the issue, really?
The issue goes back to not, I mean, help me here if I miss this, okay, but I mean, to me, the issue goes back to the fact that there's a great deal of insecurity and a great deal of woundedness and kind of our own self-loathing and our own self-contempt, and it's almost like we don't have a right to speak up. We don't feel the ability to speak up. So instead of speaking up, you know, it gets stuffed. And then once it gets stuffed, it comes out sideways. And once it comes out sideways, it defiles many.
And then we get hooked into addictions like pornography or whatever, and our fantasy life, which is an escape mechanism. And so instead of being relational and talking about our issues, we just go sideways and go, well, I'll just use a different method to cope rather than talk.
Right. Well, thank you guys so much for calling, and I'm just continue on with our little survey tonight, and hopefully somebody else will call in this evening.
Okay. Sorry, thanks so much time.
You guys have a good night, okay?
You too, bye.
All righty, bye-bye. So the question we're asking tonight is, what is your biggest issue in dealing with infidelity? What's most important to you to address, so for us to address? Your biggest issue, you can call us at area code 512-365-9930. That's 512-365-9930. Or you can email at radio@hope-now.com. It's radio@hope-now.com. We'll see you on the other side of the break. Thank you.
If you could have the marriage you've always wanted, even after being cheated on. If you could avoid losing a huge chunk of your standard of living, why would you sentence yourself to an empty, lonely room? Divorce sucks. The emotional trauma and financial loss are much worse than what you think. And infidelity can be cured. It's not as hopeless as it seems. AffairRecovery.com. Almost 90% of the couples completing our program not only enjoy restored marriages, they report a much higher level of marital satisfaction. AffairRecovery.com. Don't give up before it gets better. Join the ranks of those who found new life. AffairRecovery.com. Where healing happens.
Does your life seem void of meaning? Do you struggle with depression? Is marriage not turning out as expected? Are you disappointed in the intimacy you share? Has an unwanted behavior taken your life hostage? Do uncontrollable feelings flood uninvited into your life? If so, we can help. Crossroads Counseling is a group of highly trained mental health professionals dedicated to Jesus. Crossroads Counseling is unique in its team approach. Each member has developed a specialty in order to complement their overall goal of helping each person they serve experience the freedom and abundant life afforded through the life of Christ. Give us a call, 512-346-9299. That's 512-346-9299. Or visit our website at crossroads-counseling.net. There is hope and healing. We believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Hi, this is Rick, and you're listening to Affair Recovery Radio. And tonight we're playing the little game Ask Rick, and you can reach us at area code 512-365-9930. That's 512-365-9930. And what we're trying to do is just figure out, you know, what are the most important issues, or what is your single most important issue when it comes to dealing with infidelity? Because as we develop product, we just want to make sure that we are covering really what is important to you. So again, that's area code 512-365-9930. What's your most important question? I guess maybe question's even better than issue. Most important question you'd like to ask, and certainly would be very, very appreciative if you would do us the favor of calling us in and giving us that information. And you can also email, if you would like, at radio@hope-now.com. That's radio@hope-now.com. Tonight, if you've just checked into our program, I'm here by myself, so any help would be most appreciated when it comes to dealing with this, asking your most important question. I sure would appreciate it. Now, the other thing we were talking about just while we wait for phone calls to come in is the issue of anger. Like I said in our newsletter that I put out last week, I was absolutely floored by the number of responses that we've gotten to that particular article. And I guess at times I tend to forget how difficult anger can be. And the reason I actually wrote the article that caused all the stir came from the last radio program where we began talking about anger management. Now, if you want to read the article itself, you can go to affairrecovery.com and subscribe to the newsletter. That's affairrecovery.com, and there's a newsletter there, and actually there's a new newsletter archive you could be a part of if you would like. We've got many, many articles in the on the site that you can access. But after the last program, the thing that began to kind of roll through my head because of some of the questions that had been asked during the program were, you know, kind of what is the root of anger? Not just how do you control anger. I think so many anger management courses and the stuff written about anger really does a lot with how do you deal with it. But I've got a good friend, and he says, you know, you don't want to sweep cobwebs, you want to kill the spider. And I think with anger, a lot of times you want to get down to the spider. You know, let's get down to the root. What's causing anger? And so I actually came up with several things that I think really impact anger. Obviously, there is one type of anger, and by the way, I'm going to keep coming back. If you've got a question, what's your most important question about infidelity, please call us tonight. But the first root of anger to me is righteousness, or there's a righteous anger, a righteous indignation. And at times, guys, you know what? Anger is so incredibly important, and it's very appropriate. I think when you're defending your family and you're angry, or when there's a righteous cause, I mean, that's an appropriate anger. So you obviously, you know, can't say that all anger in and of itself is bad. In fact, I never say that anger is bad. It's just that, you know, when anger begins to injure others in a way that's, when we treat or respond in an unloving way, I'm going to be stuttering all night long, I can tell. But when we do that, ultimately, you know, that's what I think sin in anger is, as we talk about from the Christian perspective, that we do things that are incredibly unloving. But righteous anger, nothing wrong with that. And that's a good root. I mean, I hope that there are things in my life that I become very, very angry at. You know, I hope that, you know, I hate sin and that I'm angry about, you know, the things I've done to hurt other people. Not at myself, but angry at, you know, the deceptions that I bought into, and angry about injustice. And, you know, I hope my heart cares about things like that. So please don't think anger is all bad. Now, another root of anger, and you can still call in with your most important question, area code 512-365-9930, is resentment. Resentment that is unresolved is always going to cause a phenomenal amount of anger. And like when we got our call earlier in the hour, If you do not forgive someone and you don't process that, it is going to come out in absolute spades, I believe, in anger. Or it could come out in physical illness. Actually, there's several ways, but anger is certainly one of the most common ways. And what he was talking about is simply as he was wounded by other people, rather than as a child being able to address that, a resentment was actually created in him, and then that resentment began to fester, and then later in life, it began to come out sideways. It came out in very inappropriate, disrespectful sorts of ways, really injuring and hurting a lot of other people. And what's funny about that is his actions, not funny, but his actions also have the ability to create an offense or woundedness in his wife. And this happens all the time when you're dealing with infidelity, because sometimes that that hurt becomes, for the betrayed spouse, becomes a resentment. And then that resentment, you know, causes them to really have to process and to deal with anger. And if they're not able to process that anger, if they kind of stuff it, and because I'm really impressed with Kathy and her willingness to go ahead and talk about it, and also her husband's willingness to listen to her talk. Because if she didn't do that, if she just tried to pretend that everything's okay, ultimately that resentment would probably come out in anger or in some sort of physical illness or in maybe her acting out and doing something inappropriate. So dealing with the core of resentment is incredibly important. If we don't forgive, ultimately, it's going to come back and it's going to impact us and it's going to impact everybody around us if we don't take care of those resentments. So if you've got resentments as a result of what your mate's done, I just really encourage you to seek some help. You know, how do you let that go? And how do you get free from that? And again, that's a process. That's not anything that's going to happen in the next 30 minutes. It's probably going to happen, as we say at our place, somewhere between 12 and 18 months, 18 and 24 months. It is a process. But there has to be a commitment to forgive and a commitment to begin to look at the situation very, very differently. And that happens over time. Now, the third thing, and again, please, if you got, you know, what's your most important question? I still want to play Ask Rick. Obviously, nobody's calling in here. But the most important question, and you can call us at 512-365-9930. That's 512-365-9930. Or you can email us at radio@hope-now.com. So the next root of anger is actually a soul wound. And this one is you know, that's an interesting one. And probably our previous callers, they're dealing somewhat with soul wounds. And soul wounds to me are ways that we were really hurt as a child, hurt at maybe a place from long ago where there was a tremendous wounding, a trauma as a result of things that others did to us, or maybe embarrassing situations that we helped perpetrate against us. And those soul wounds actually began to, I think, profoundly impact our identity. They impact the way we see us. And those memories where those wounds exist carry a great deal of energy. And any time that I get triggered, then that soul wound can be hit, and there will be an emotional flooding that is unbelievable. And now, not all soul wounds actually produce anger. One of my kind of funny little soul wounds produces shame, and I've got another one that produces anger. But if you hit that trigger and those emotions come flooding up, then I'm going to feel very shameful. And I know where it's coming from. I know that it's, you know, my reaction, soul wounds cause this. It's like I will have a $500 reaction to maybe just, you know, a 50-cent offense. But because of the way it happens, it hits that old woundedness, that maybe point of trauma, as Wayne talks about, in my soul. And at that point, emotions flood, and as emotions flood, then all kinds of anger will begin to just kind of spill out, and inappropriately on the people that I'm with. So, you know, I have to get down and begin to do the work of, you know, I think getting inner healing in terms of that identity wound that happened way back there. And again, if you feel like that some of your anger results from an identity wound that occurred as a result of maybe something others did to you, sexual abuse, sometimes just traumatic things happen at school. In that sense, you need to ask the Lord to heal that, and you may need to get help in prayer to get that healed, so that, you know, it's like Satan no longer has that stronghold there to come in and get a hold of you and give you a hard time. Another root of anger, we talked about some of these in the last program, but while we're talking about roots, guilt is an incredible root of anger. And if I carry guilt about something, a lot of times my primary defense mechanism, my way of trying to push away guilt, will ultimately be anger. It's almost like a bait and switch. You know, I get angry because I can't believe you would accuse me of doing something like that, or that you would call me on this. And it's like my anger becomes so intense, it almost distracts the discussion from actually what the other person, you know, is trying to expose in me or trying to point out in me. And so because of that intense feeling of guilt, secondary emotion, anger comes out. And I feel like, you know, I'm going to lose it simply because of my embarrassment, but my embarrassment actually is exhibited as anger. So a lot of times, if you're dealing with anger, you really want to sit there and ask, you know, am I dealing with guilt here? I mean, is it my guilt and my inability to take responsibility for my own failure that's causing me to have to blame another person? You know, if you think about it, in the Garden of Eden, the very, very first defense mechanism was blaming. You know, when God said to Adam, you know, what in the world have you done? And he said, well, this woman you gave me, you know. Of course, the second one was victim status when Eve said, well, the devil made me do it. So in reality, guilt is certainly one of the cores, one of the roots of anger. Another core or root of anger is actually inferiority. That if someone, again, this is an identity piece, but if I am not secure in myself, if I have my own self-loathing, my own self-contempt, my own lack of God acceptance, then ultimately if someone, quote, disrespects me and makes me feel inferior, and the callers at the first part of the hour kind of talked about this one a little bit, that can create a tremendous amount of anger. Because a lot of times we're very, very dependent on other people validating us in order for us to be able to feel okay about us. And if we, you know, are others validated, in other words, we're looking to others, and that's kind of our primary means of esteem, where how others treat us or how they respond to us, then ultimately when someone does something to make me feel inferior, when they don't perceive me or treat me the way I think I ought to be treated or perceived, then I'll respond in rage. I'll respond with a tremendous amount of anger, all because of the inferiority that is actually being perpetrated, or the, maybe not perpetrated, but the actions that other people are doing that make me feel inferior. You know, I think in the situation with infidelity, frequently someone will do something to make another person feel very, very inferior. In fact, there can be a lot of shaming behaviors both directions. And as that happens, frequently inferiority ends up, you know, happening, and then anger begins to escalate and the couple kind of goes nutso. It's a clinical term. The next root of anger is just fear. And that is that old-time fight or flight that is a necessary mechanism that God actually created within us to help us survive. And it's just at times that we live in situations where we feel a great deal of fear when there's really nothing to fear. But, you know, it's almost like we've become such fearful creatures. You know, instead of facing circumstances, as that fear begins to well up in us, what we end up doing is responding with anger, because anger makes us feel powerful. Anger can make us feel in control. You know, anger can kind of cause us to be over other people. And, you know, that fear is really what's behind the anger. It's interesting. I remember once when I was called in by my boss, and I actually wasn't called in. I take that back. I went in because he was handling a case. He had made a decision on a case that I didn't like. And so I went in, and I was kind of afraid for this kid. I was afraid for myself because of what he was doing. And so I went off in anger. And it was really fear and inferiority that was kind of driving my anger. And as I started yelling at my boss, the one thing I really hadn't anticipated was he had been a colonel in the military, and his ability to yell far exceeded my ability to yell. As a little 23-year-old, I had never seen anything quite like that in my life, and I only thought I was afraid when I went in there and started yelling out of fear, because he saw my yelling, raised it about 15, scared me half to death, and, you know, he kind of scared the anger right out of me, I guess. But fear can certainly be a root for anger. So, again, if you're feeling anger, go back in and ask yourself, you know, is fear the root? And if fear is the root, you know, there's two things I know about fear. One, fear is always future-oriented. And, you know, I need to be able to stay in the moment, because I really think God is going to give each of us the ability. He's going to give you guys the ability to handle whatever you have to face today. But he doesn't give you more grace than what you need in the moment. You know, he only gives you what you need right now. And if you begin to, I think, leave the presence of God by moving off in the future somewhere, sometime, wondering what's going to happen, then the net consequence is always going to be fear. And that's just because I'm not living in the moment, and I'm not allowing, I think, God to carry me through those circumstances. And the second thing I've learned about fear is that fear has an issue with faith, that if I put my faith on something that's unstable, I'm always going to experience fear. That faith is an eye, as an organ of the body. I think we've talked about this once before. It's an organ of the body, just like my eyes or my ears. My eyes were never intended to generate light. They're just intended to perceive light. Nor is my ear intended to generate sound. It's just intended to receive sound. When it does begin to create sound, it creates a bit of a problem. But in reality, my faith is not intended to create the work of God. I really believe it's intended to perceive the work of God. But if I focus my faith on something unstable, I'll always experience fear. And if I experience fear, then there's a really good chance that I'll exhibit anger. I'll begin to do something out of anger and basically, you know, wound other people. And the final root of anger, and by the way, guys, if you're going to call in and you've got another, you know, a question to ask Rick, you've only got 10 minutes. You better call in quick. Not much time left. 512-365-9930. That's 512-365-9930. Of course, it may be everybody's already got other answers, so they don't have any questions, so that might be the case. So, trauma and hurt. And the last thing that we do oftentimes is that when we're hurt, our response to hurt is anger. And again, probably a bit of a self-defense mechanism, a very natural reaction. But I need to understand that that anger, as that hurt comes on, is really, again, just a secondary emotion. It is not primary. It is secondary. And, you know, I've got to figure out a way, you know, how do I begin to see the hurt and let God deal with the hurt rather than, you know, hurt back in response to that particular hurt. So, I believe we have a caller on line one here. No, we don't. Okay, we do. No name, though. Okay, good. What would be your question?
And he divorced me over it, and now my question is, I pray for him every day for spiritual healing. Should I continue to do that, or am I just
trying to grab onto something that's not there.
Well, when you pray for spiritual healing for him, is that so that he'll come back, or are you just praying for spiritual healing?
Primarily it's for spiritual healing, but I would hope that God could redeem my marriage in the future.
Right. I think that the question you're asking is a great question. You know, how do you pray for someone who's kind of strayed and gone elsewhere? I mean, is that sort of part of your question there too?
Yes.
You know, in my mind, I think if you look at 1 Corinthians 5, the first thing you begin to pray is that what you're talking about is kind of the salvation of their soul, that they'll come to their senses, that they'll find their way back to God, that somehow they will find healing. And I think that your prayer is spot on. That is after a divorce or after a separation, that's the primary thing you want to pray, is that the other person ultimately is going to come to their senses for the sake of their soul, you know? And then secondary, you know, that I would hope they'd be able to come back and be back in relationship with you. How long has it been that y'all been separated?
About a year and a half.
I know that's really hard.
It was a lot more difficult than I ever thought it would be.
Yeah, most people are pretty naive when it comes to divorce. That's why one of our things is, you know, divorce just really destroys. I mean, it is horrible how painful it is.
Well, it's destroyed the relationship and respect that our two sons had, because they were young men, you know, like 18 and, you know, 21. And so they figured out what was going on right off the bat. And I guess my former husband is so ashamed, he has a very strained relationship with them, and he doesn't even really have any contact with his, like, brothers and sister.
Right. So it's just, this has kind of caused him to be totally isolated.
Right.
Well, do you mind if I just pray for him right now?
No, that would be fine.
Maybe together, the Lord, because I know where two or more are gathered together, okay? And so, Lord Jesus, we just pray for her husband that ultimately, I mean, the solution for him isn't this marriage. The solution to him isn't the places he's looking. We just believe you're the solution. And I pray with her that you help him to find his way, help him to find ultimately what he's truly looking for. And Lord, if it's your will, I just pray for this marriage that you bring him back to. And that somehow, I also pray for your protection for her children, her boys, that as they watch this, that I think you protect them, Lord, from the damage of what this has done for them. And I pray you'll also grant my sister here grace in being able to walk through this. I ask that in your name. Amen.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I'll pray with you, okay? I'll keep praying.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for calling tonight.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Okay. John?
Oh, yes.
Hi, this is Rick.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize I was on the air right now. Yes, I was trying to figure out...
You're trying to figure out what? I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm sorry. Let's see... Actually, it's, I was curious about all the possible. I had a problem with my wife, but most of all, the biggest one I have with that's related with this is I have like ADHD, and I'm really hard to articulate sometimes. But anyway, I'm trying to figure out as far as the anger that's affiliated with, because I can relate so much with what you said tonight, but I'm trying to figure out how to resolve it, because it's really hard. It's affecting my prayer life. It's affecting my spiritual. I don't know if there's spiritual warfare involved, but it's someone seduced me. We are on the air, right?
Right, we're on the air.
Okay, and so I'm trying to find out exactly how to get through, because I can't talk with the person, but it's coming out in like a passive aggressive thing, but it's really starting to affect a lot of other things because they won't admit it that they did this, and it's really starting to cause some problems, you know, with my I don't know, mental well-being, you might say, or something like that.
You bet. You know, John, since we have such a short period of time, let me suggest something. If you go to our website, affairrecovery.com, there are actually several resources you could probably tap into that would be very useful for you. The radio program on anger that's currently posted, it's not this one, but it's another one, actually talks about very specific techniques on how to control some of what you're talking about. So that might be useful. And another thing that might be useful is any of the programs that we've done in the past on forgiveness. And that I think that might help you out some.
Well, forgiveness is definitely what I thought also was the key. I'm trying to find out exactly how to do that when a person won't acknowledge that it happened. So,
right.
So I was trying to find out.
And I know we're running out of time here. That's why I'm hurrying you up. But
But
I will just tell you that we talk about how you forgive someone because we'll tell you that repentance is not a necessary part of forgiveness. And so if you'll listen to one of the programs on forgiveness, I think that'll help. Well, we just have a couple of seconds, so we do need to go.
Right.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us tonight here at Affair Recovery Radio. And we'll be back next week. John and Leslie, I believe, will be on. And I hope you guys have a blessed week and come join us at affairrecovery.com. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us tonight and being a part of the newest addition to our services, Affair Recovery Radio, radio to the power of